Hart versus Commonwealth, Ms. Rosenblatt and Ms. Dara, good morning. And as you both know, you appear before, you have 15 minutes to argue, and as appellant's counsel, Ms. Rosenblatt, would you like to reserve a portion of that 15 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, please, Your Honor.
How much?
If I were 5 minutes. Please.
Okay, absolutely. You have it, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Your Honor, would that court like me to approach?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Barbara Rosenblatt. I'm representing Mr. Hart for the Newport News Public Defender's Office. We're before the court on assault and battery charge of Mr. Hart, who is a school official at Achievable Dreams in Newport News. While working in his job as capacity as the school official who maintains order, he came across a DeAndre Ware, Mr. Ware of the school, who was causing a commotion in the cafeteria. While in the cafeteria, there was issues with the boy cutting in line. There had been previous issues. It had been felt that the child needed to be removed from the area to make sure there are no problems. In the process of removing the child from the cafeteria directly across the hall, which is only a few feet, Mr. Ware started fighting with the Mr. Hart and causing another commotion. He decided he didn't want to go. He put all of his weight onto his feet, went down to the ground, so there was no way for Mr. Hart to get him across and out of the safe area of the hallway where other students were walking by. At that point, Mr. Ware also...
And that area, if I could ask you, where the cafeteria goes into that hall, there's no door from the cafeteria to the hall there, is it? Or is it?
Your Honor, I'm not sure if there's an actual door.
The hall there is rather narrow.
It is extremely narrow. They were going just across the hall. One of the teachers testified that at one point the door was somewhat closed, so there would be a door on the teacher's side. In terms of the cafeteria, I do not know if there was a door or there was not a door, or if they were open at that point since they were eating lunch.
And the teacher's lounge is, I looked at the videotape. It's rather brief, but...
It's extremely brief and extremely quick for Mr. Hart to make any decisions.
So the door to the left in the videotape is a teacher's lounge. The door straight ahead takes you outside.
Yes.
In the videotape, you saw four school personnel standing there in various places. There's a woman standing there, and she sort of does like this, mm-hmm. who is Caucasian. Is that... his teacher?
That is a teacher at the school. It is not one of his teachers, as far as I understand. She testified, but she did not testify to being his teacher.
So that was not the first teacher who testified then?
I believe that was the second teacher who testified that saw the incident outside the hall.
Bordino, who said
Bordino.
She was his teacher,
yes.
I believe. And then you have Bonner, mm-hmm. who was in the teacher's lounge at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have... Ms. Francis, mm-hmm. who also was in the teacher's lounge. And
yes.
She seems to be the woman with glasses who stands in the door of the teacher's lounge as this is going on. Is that right?
That is my understanding of how the mm-hmm. situation went, because at one point the door was closed a little bit more for the teacher's lounge than it was open. So those are the three locations of the people. We also had Ms. Bordino, who testified to hearing the commotion coming from the cafeteria itself. So
and she was his teacher, because she said she went to the cafeteria with her class and then she left, right? Because
Your Honor,
she was working a half day.
But that was the first grade class. This child is in fourth grade, if I am correct in remembering the exact classes of who she brought her class in. This child was in fourth grade. He had been brought by a different teacher she had taught him before, if I am recalling correctly.
Okay. So when she was asked on cross-examination, were you DeAndre's teacher, and she said yes, she meant in the past, I guess.
Then, Your Honor, I may be confused, but when I spoke, it was my understanding that at that point she was not his teacher. But she was a teacher at Achievable Dreams.
I only worked a half day that day.
Yes, Your Honor.
But then she said she wasn't in the hall later on, but the videotape seems to show her in the hall.
Yes, Your Honor. And that was the person who testified. She saw it inside, and then the videotape showed her outside.
Right.
But that's kind of how quickly this whole thing moved about, is that they saw a commotion and they saw the...
And there's no real door that apparently was keeping anyone from seeing what was going on from the hall into the cafeteria.
No.
Okay,
not.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you,
no,
but I wanted
please.
To get that straight of which witness was where and who was who.
Because they testified on direct one way, and then they changed it a little on cross, and that was one of the issues in terms of where everyone was located and what they saw, because it was the understanding that Ms. Mordino saw the beginning of the incident, that Ms. Bonner saw the middle of the incident and towards the end, and Ms. Francis saw the end of the incident.
Okay.
So that was the order in terms of our understanding of who saw what at what point. But the main issue of this comes from Lambert v. Commonwealth in the terms of the amount of force that is being used on the child to get the child out of the necessary area. There were markings on the child, as the court is aware. You saw the pictures of the child. But I think it's important to note that the markings are under his arm, by his chest, which is extremely consistent with what you saw on the video, which is exactly the Mr. Hart having to pull him out of the area, because as Mr. Ware testified, he was putting all of his pressure on his feet. He was not letting Mr. Ware move him. Mr. Hart could not leave a child who was throwing a fit to the point that he wouldn't let himself be moved in the middle of a hallway. And there needed to be some action taken and some action taken quickly. And Lambert v. Commonwealth specifically...
Can I ask you about the punch that was alleged?
Your Honor, the punch and the push and the shove, they all seem to come together in terms of what words were used at what time. The very first time anything is mentioned, Mr. Ware says he pushed me. And then later he says he pushed and he punched me at the same time. And I don't think it's possible to make a push and punch at the same time.
Well, Mr. Ware, DeAndre Ware, said that this happened in the teacher's lounge.
Yes.
Didn't it say?
Later at the teacher's lounge is where he first pushed him out of the cafeteria, and then he pushed him and punched him during the
pushed him
lounge.
Out of the cafeteria or pulled him out of the cafeteria? Or
he says both at one point. He says shoved him.
Okay.
And that's why all the words were being used interchangeably, because there was no way for Mr. Hart to physically push and punch a child at the same time.
The transcript, it seems like he's asked DeAndre Ware, where were you punched? Was it in the teacher's lounge? And he was asked that at least twice, I believe, maybe more. And he said yes each time that I recall.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, does he ever allege he was punched anywhere other than in the teacher's lounge?
No. He does not anywhere besides the teacher's lounge. But there's no markings on the child of any sort of punch. I understand the court takes the credibility of the child, but that needs to be measured to what the injuries were. The injuries are consistent with him being pulled under his arms, which is clear on the video. If the child is injured from that, and there's a punch into the child's chest, there would be some markings there. And there's nothing that's consistent
with any
markings.
There's a rather large bruise here, but it is sort of in this area.
It is, but that's the full area that his arms were under. Mr. Hart had to mm-hmm. hook his arms around and pull, and that would make a marking. Mr. Ware's mother states that it was close to his chest, but there's no one that says that it's on his chest, inside his chest. So in being consistent with an actual punch itself, it's never defined where this punch might have occurred. It's strange to get a straight punch into your chest that way, which is why it was my belief that these words started being used interchangeably through counsel, through witnesses, through things of that sort.
Ms. Francis apparently said in a written statement that is not in the record, that she saw Mr. Hart push DeAndre into the refrigerator.
She does, and that is not in the record. It was only used to impeach her. Judge Tench specifically stated that he would note that he believed that the push occurred into the refrigerator, but it was never introduced into evidence as that's what happened.
He says that he believes DeAndre, which mm-hmm. is pretty important as the
yes.
fact finder, and he says that there was a pushing into the machine, is the way I think he puts it.
Yes, and that was not introduced in terms of evidence as that's what happened. It was used to impeach the teacher, and the teacher then said, well, I mean put him in front of the refrigerator. So in that sense, there was nothing to show that that was what happened, because what is said on the day of court is what is taken as the truth of the matter. And she was able to clarify her words at that time, and that's what she did on that day, is that she meant put him. But the court does have the ability for their reliability, for the court's obvious judgment in the witness, but it still needs to show the consistency of what happened. And the consistency bruising is what's going to cause this child, and that's what's going to actually cause harm to the child. And that's why the bruising on his arms is what matters, is because when you start to change the words interchangeably, and I specifically state about the part where it's on the transcript, it's page 47, where Mr. Ware states that he shoved and punched me at the same time. So it's like I said before, you can't shove and punch someone at the same time. These all are starting to come together in terms of what he does, how he was touched, and in what way. So an actual punch itself would be an individual mark outside of what was used from just the original pulling the child and dragging the child, because the child was putting all the pressure on his feet.
Well, you have, it seems like, completely inconsistent testimony, at least, or contradictory testimony between DeAndre Ware and Ms. Francis and Mrs. Bonner, who were both in the teacher's lounge, and indicate they didn't see, I think Ms. Bonner said that she even saw him touch him in the teacher's lounge.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Francis said he guided him in and put him next to the refrigerator.
Yes.
So if the trial judge is saying, I believe DeAndre, does that necessarily mean, at least with regard to that, he does not believe the teachers?
Well, I think that he finds DeAndre to be credible in the sense of the whole story and the totality of the circumstances, but it's still, that's the totality of the circumstances, and I think that the court needs to specifically look at Lambert and see that it was not addressed in court, that the teacher deserves due diligence in what he's doing, that he needs to make the decisions at that time, and that there can be some contact between the two parties, unlike a normal assault and battery where there cannot be that contact. And with Lambert, they talked about no other ways to complete the act, which the Commonwealth spoke about in this case as well. But the court decided that didn't matter. It needed to be handled in a reasonable way, and this was handled in a reasonable way, because even with the child's testimony, what's consistent with his testimony, who the court found credible, again, is the markings on his arm. And the words, and I think this is obviously the court's issue, is the punch. But when you're saying punch and shoving at the same time, there's not another marking on his body independent.
I just want to let you know you're going into your rebuttal time.
Then, Your Honor, I would ask to step back now. I was unaware of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rosemary. I had a lot of questions for you, so I'll give you a little extra time if you need it.
Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Darren.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Leah Darren for the Commonwealth. With all due respect, Your Honor, many of the court's questions and much of counsel's argument this morning is argument that's appropriate in the trial court, but it's not appropriate for this court on appeal.
Why is that, Ms. Darren?
Because, I'm sorry, go ahead, Your Honor.
Well, what you have here is a situation where the trial judge rules, he says he believes DeAndre, which is very important as a fact finder, but his only other comment really is he pushed him in, it appears to be pushed into the machine, which must mean the refrigerator. He essentially has to disbelieve the two teachers in the teacher's lounge who say that he was at most guided into the teacher's lounge and there was no punch or hitting or shoving in there. Now, Ms. Francis was impeached based on her earlier statement, but we don't have that statement in the record to consider. So how do we handle that?
Well,
why isn't the trial court plainly wrong on the facts here?
I think this is a classic case where the judge saw video and heard testimony that varied from one side to the other, both in the defendant's favor and in the Commonwealth's favor. This is a classic case where the trial judge was charged with viewing all of the evidence. He was not required to accept the totality of any witness's testimony, and he was present to watch those witnesses, to see the video and observe the witnesses and hear their testimony and judge their credibility. And while other counsel has talked and the court has pointed out this morning that this issue about the refrigerator is not technically in the record for substantive reasons, there was no objection. I'm looking at page 107 of the appendix record from defense counsel at that point to say, "Judge, you're relying on something that's not technically in the record for that purpose." But aside from that, our position would be...
I was assuming at that point that they were going to admit it, her previous statement, into the record.
Well, that certainly it was brought out. It appeared to be for impeachment purposes. But nevertheless, I think what the court focused on is what happened towards the end of this very quick altercation between the student and the professional and a teacher, which may well have started out as a reasonable physical touching or a reasonable force necessary to quell the disturbance or remove the student from the scene, which is provided for by the statute, and moved from a reasonable action and to an unreasonable action. There's no question at page 107 of the record, the judge makes a specific finding that he believes this child. And the child says he ends up on the floor being pushed and punched at the same time. He says he was shoved, he was pushed. That's at pages 61 and 62 of the appendix record. He says he was punched in the chest by the defendant with his fist. That is at pages 61 and 66 of the appendix record. The student child also says that the defendant starts yelling at him at that point. And we do have the witness Francis saying at page 96 of the appendix record that while in the teacher's lounge, the student was pushed into a refrigerator. So that certainly is at least is consistent with the pushing.
Well, she doesn't say that on 96, no. Right? She says that early, and she said that at that point she hems and haws a bit, and well, she said he was placed in next to the refrigerator.
I think that the bottom line here is that the judge, again, this rolls back to what's the job of the trial judge, and it was the job of the trial judge to parse through this testimony and make a decision on what he deemed credible and what was not credible. And at least to the extent that the child student says, "I was pushed at that point," it's certainly not inconsistent, and I think it's really not relevant to the analysis that for this court, and that is whether the court's judgment was plainly wrong and without evidence to support it. It clearly was, based on the record pages that we have cited to the court.
It seems to me in this kind of specialized area, what the court has to do is much different from what it would normally do, because you have really a altered definition of what otherwise would be the normal type act. Was it unlawful touching? And you're also seeing, because the school and unfortunately the child, through no fault of their own, have the potential of creating what if you didn't have any difficulties. would just be a old-fashioned disturbance. And recognizing that, now it seems you've added a different dimension on what would be the normal way of adjudicating this, and that is you're supposed to give some deference to the school official who happens to be in the middle of trying to keep peace quickly in a volatile situation which is not controlled under the normal thing. What is the real standard or workable standard that the judge is supposed to determine meets some standard? You've got a altered understanding of which throws us into reasonableness, and then we have something, the idea that you got to give some deference to how the teacher, let's see, just use shorthand for anybody that's in the middle of this kind of disturbance, teacher or other official, when you say give deference to their approach to it, it seems to me you come up with some kind of alternative of how you apply what's reasonable. You know, it's not the ordinary reasonable man standard. It must be the ordinary reasonable teacher who's caught in the middle of this. What is the standard the judge in reviewing this months later applies?
Well, I think the statute says that it has to be force. The statute contemplates the application of force, and that has to be a reasonable force necessary to quell the disturbance or remove.
But what is the definition of who's the reasonable ordinary man in this case?
Well, the court gives due deference to the school official. So it's what's reasonable. I believe what the standard is what's reasonable to the reasonable. It's the reasonable school official, the reasonable teacher, what the reasonable teacher would consider reasonable force, I believe is what the standard would be. And
would it
so
be what this teacher feels is reasonable?
I don't think it's an objective reasonable man, not a subjective. An objective reasonable teacher, not a subjective reasonable teacher standard.
How do we know that's what the legislature meant?
Well,
between objective or subjective?
I think
this man or the ordinary reasonable school official.
Well, if it were not an objective test, then I think then any force, so long as the teacher thought it was reasonable, would be all right to apply under the statute, and I think we would all agree that wouldn't be appropriate. Your Honor,
that standard is sometimes applied in criminal law, isn't it?
Well, I do think that the short answer to your question is yes. But I do think those cases where you
in
have
fact,
a similar
self-defense brings you right into that, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, yes, but I think in the context of reading those cases, you realize that from the defendant's perspective, it's still there's still a requirement that perspective is reasonable. So I think that while you could make this argument that. Just because if a school official thought what he did was reasonable, that's the end of the story. The fact of the matter is that it's an objective test. It has to be an objective test in order for it to be workable. And so what we have here is you give deference to the teacher, but that the force that's used, that's allowed for by statute, has to be reasonable in order to quell a disturbance or remove the student from the scene. And so what you have here in this case is unreasonableness. And it's unreasonableness because the activity of punching is not consistent with quelling the disturbance or removing the child.
The trial court doesn't find, when he makes his holding here, he doesn't find that he was punched. He says, I find the totality of the actions and the testimony of the young man. I do believe the young man. I note one of the teachers indicating the pushing into the machine. I think that constitutes an assault. I do find you are guilty. So it seems his focus is on the pushing into the refrigerator, yet, one, that's not in the record now, and second, she clarified that in her testimony and said he put him next to the refrigerator. And DeAndre says, I was punched in the teacher's lounge. He answered Ms. Rosenblatt on that several times to that effect. Yet both of these teachers in the teacher's lounge said he was never punched or any more than guided into the teacher's lounge and put next to the refrigerator. So,
well,
can you help me with that?
The Judge Beals, I'd say, number one, that there was no objection to the extent there were inconsistencies in the court's finding of guilt at that point. There was no objection. There was by opposing counsel. And second of all,
objecting to
the fact that he relied on something that really wasn't in evidence, the machine, and your others, your Honor's other comments go to the trial judges, the function of the trial judge, and
it's going to whether this court has got to decide whether he was plainly wrong.
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, the trial judge was not required to make any statement.
He wasn't, but when he makes them, then he has to be held to them.
Well, I believe that if you view the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, and the judgment on appeal, and the rule that the judgment on appeal must be affirmed unless plainly wrong or without evidence to support it, then we, unless there's an objection, we don't get into some of the inconsistencies of the court's ruling. I think that's the way that this must be handled in order for these rules to be workable. So we submit that there certainly was evidence to support the conviction, that the use of force here went beyond what was necessary to quell the disturbance or remove the child. In addition to the facts that I've relied on,
can I just ask you on the reasonable judgment and the deference that Judge Bumgardner was asking about in the statute, subpart G of the statute? You've got a cafeteria full of not just his class of fourth graders, but first graders who are getting ready to leave and walk down that narrow hall, presumably, and you've got a child out there in the hall who's having a fit on the floor in the middle of the hall, and he himself testifies he's putting his feet into the floor to try to keep himself from being moved.
Yes.
And if you're lifted under your arms at that point, you may get bruising here. So that's what I'm wrestling with, I must tell you.
Well, the child says that he was punched in the chest. That's at 66, with a fist at 61. And he says at 61 that this occurred at the same time. And it's our position, Your Honor, my time is up. May I conclude? It's our position that it's that force that takes this case out of what was reasonable and moves it into the unreasonable force category. And that's what supports the misdemeanor assault and battery conviction. We submit the court's finding was not plainly wrong. It was not without evidence to support it. And under those circumstances, this court, pursuant to the rules applicable to appellate courts, is to affirm the judgment. The fact that we might have handled this case differently is of no import. Are there any other questions?
Any further questions, Ms.
Thank
Darren?
You very much.
Thank you, Ms. Darren. Ms. Rosenblatt, can you address that? Because obviously, given the standard of review here, and particularly in a case like this, there's a lot of deference owed the trial court. He doesn't have to say he believes DeAndre with regard to the punch, but if he doesn't say anything, isn't there at least an inference that he does.
Well, he gives credibility, and he states that he gives credibility to Mr. Ware's testimony, but that doesn't say that he believes everything that is said. In the totality of the circumstances, he finds that Mr. Ware's testimony is credible, but he does not say that everything he said I believe. And so at that point, you have to look at what is clear that actually happened, because there's nothing that shows that the punched with the fist. He does not specifically say, and I go towards the being punched with a fist. The only thing he mentions is the statement about being pushed into a refrigerator, which is later explained by...
But the trial judge doesn't have to say everything
he does
that
not,
he is thinking about in making his ruling.
He does not, but once he makes a statement, we're now also relying on his statement, and he does not say that I believe everything that the child said. So it's still, he states the totality of the circumstances. So the court obviously can only overrule this if he's plainly wrong, but it's clear that he relies on something that's not in evidence, as well as the fact that...
But there was no objection to that ever made, was there?
Your Honor, there was not objection made, but it was only used for impeachment purposes. It's not stated that that is what truly happened, because when you bring an inconsistent statement in, that's not then seen as the truth. The person on the stand has the opportunity to obviously explain themselves, which she did in this situation. So that is what is stated on in under oath on that day in court. So the court, as he's stating all this, never says that he does not believe the teachers and what the teachers are saying are wrong. He talks about the totality of the circumstances is what needs to be looked at. But when he identifies the totality of the circumstances, he speaks about something that was not placed into evidence in terms of the teacher on this day saying, yes, that is clearly what I meant. And that is what the court here also has to look at, the complete totality of the circumstances. The boy's entire testimony is not seen as truthful. It can be credible in terms of the assault on the arms and whether that rises to the level. And the judge also specifically asked the Commonwealth about questions dealing with bruising and things of that sort. So I think that it's still plainly wrong when the court can say that he believes the credibility of the juvenile, yet state he's believing something that was not ever placed on record, and if the court would like me to finish, that he can't pick both ways. He needs to follow through on a full determination. The teachers have stated that they didn't see it. He didn't say anything that he doesn't believe them, but this is totality, and the only thing that's consistent is the pulling under the arms. There's nothing consistent with punching because there's no bruising. I believe it was being used interchangeably, and the teacher herself clarifies in trial what she meant.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Rosenblatt. We will greet counsel.
Thank you.
And then the next case on the docket is Dano Joseph Armstrong, Jr. versus Commonwealth.